And I know you all know all the places on the maps real well. It's your first test. Hey, believe me, this test seems like a big deal today. You wait. Nothing. Yeah. Oh, but which reminds me, in this class, I will sometime this semester give you a pop quiz without any forewarning on the books of the Bible. They have to be recognizable spelling. No, they have to be exact. Will not be a test on spelling. But you have to say the books of the Bible in order. Some of you know the song on the books of the Bible. Some of you that have taught Sunday school. And just learn that song. That it makes it so easy. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Come, little children, try to tell. Yeah. Can't sing out loud while you take the test. But learn the books of the Bible. How many of you do not know the books of the Bible in order? Okay. This book, I'd like to introduce you to this book. This book is the greatest literature the world has ever seen. And I would like you, in many aspects it is, and I would like you to know the different books. And I'd like you to know them in order, so that when I tell you Nehemiah, you know right where to turn. Or Zabakuk. Or Hezekiah. Or whatever. Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah. You need to know where they're all at. So I want you to know those in order. There are 66 books. Now, by the way, I am passing out your test on the map. It's file number 4, those of you that are on tape. And there's one thing this map is lacking, and that is a place for your name. So as soon as you get it, I want you to put your name on it, okay? You can Okay, a couple quick points. Number one, be sure you put your name on it. Number two is that, see number 6 on the map? Remember good old number 6 that we moved? Now it has a number. So I'd like you to move number 6. You can just leave it there. Don't worry about it. But just remember that number 6 is really on the northeast point of that body of water, number 9. Okay? So go ahead. You have about 15 minutes. Oh, you can use your file. As long as your file does not have answers on it, you can use your file in order to find the places. And the reason why I let you do that, you can use file number 3. File number 3 is the one that has all the lists of the places and the rivers and all of that. The reason why I let you do that is because the purpose for this test and this information is that when you hear the name, you'll know where it's at. Oh, the map. Yes. Write the name of the place on the right margin, right next to the number. No, not on it. On the number. By the number. Okay. Yes, number 6. Right. Number 6, yeah. And just put by number 6 that name of that city. That more recent research has said is in that same place. Oh, and also, I think it's pretty explanatory, but Numbers 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, and 42 are areas. And they're not just huge mountains, they're areas. That'll be explanatory. Now, if you don't have your file with you, with all those places on it, look on the neighbors. You can do that. But I would suggest you put down everything that you know right away. Just go through it. Put down everything you know right away. Don't even worry about looking at anything else until you're all done. Don't worry about this next file that I'm passing out. I'm passing out file number 5, which is the lineage of Jesus Christ. Go ahead, just leave it on your desk or put it with your books until you're done with the test. correct your tennis. What I want you to do is exchange your map with somebody else. Put your name down as corrector. And when you put your name down as corrector, just put a C/B, which means corrected by. C/B, corrected by, and then put your name. Use different color pen. And if they miss one, put down the correct answer for them. Whatever they miss, give them a correct answer. Put the correct answer down for them, please. Pardon me? CB means corrected by. Okay, that's okay. Well, I don't have my map with me. I need somebody else's map. It's just a map, any old map. Okay, number one, Mount Hermon. Number two is Caesarea Philippi. Number three is Waters of Merom. Number four is Gergesa. Number five is Capernaum. Number six is Bethsaida. Number seven is Dalmanutha. Number eight is Tiberias. Number nine is Sea of Galilee. Number 10 is the Yarmouk River. Number 11 is Gadara. Number 12 is Mount Tabor. Number 13 is Cana. Number 14 is Nazareth. Number 15 is Nain. Number 16 is the Kishon River. 17 is Mount Carmel. 18 is Caesarea. 19 is Joppa. 20 is Gaza. 21 is the Mediterranean Sea. 22 is Mount Ebal. 23 is Sychar. 24 is Mount Gerizim. 25 is the Jordan River. 26 is the mountains of Gilead. 27 is the Jabbok River. 28 is Mount Nebo. 29 is Bethabara. 30 is Jericho. 31 is the Dead Sea. 32 is the Kidron River. 33 is Bethany. 34 is Jerusalem. 35 is Bethlehem. 36 is Hebron. 37 is the area of Galilee. 38 is Samaria. 39 is Judea. 40 is Idumea, 41 is Perea, and 42 is Decapolis. So, now, there's 2 points off for each one that they miss. Forgot to tell you that. 2 points off. And I want you to subtract it from 100. So, yeah, that's just for simplicity. Everybody gets 16 extra points. So it's 2 points off, subtract the minus number from 100, and return the paper back to its owner, please. Hopefully everybody got 100%, or close to it. Okay, go ahead and pass them in as soon as you look at it, and rejoice or weep or whatever. Weep with those who weep, and rejoice with those who rejoice. Yes, yes. No, you can just enjoy. The honor students, they just sit around, do nothing, relax, listen, get blessed. Right, hey, that's what's meant to be too easy. Okay, turn them all in. Thank you. Okay, looking at that file that I handed out, file number 5, which is the file on the lineage of Christ. We talked about the information already So I'm just going to look at the file with you. The lineage of Jesus Christ. Notice on the left there, it's got Luke chapter 3, and then it's got the actual natural lineage through Mary. There's a couple of tip-offs that it's not the usual genealogy in Luke chapter 3. Thanks. And I just want to mention a couple of things to you. In verse 23, it says, "And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, in parenthesis, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was of Heli." It's as was supposed. And also, it's interesting that Joseph has no definite article, and all the other names do. All the other names have a definite article, and Joseph doesn't. And so, it's sort of a tip-off that we're following a little bit different genealogy than normal. And the virgin birth is probably not the only, it's not the complete explanation. But undoubtedly because it's following us through Mary. Joseph was not the offspring of Heli, but of Jacob, as shown by Matthew's begat. Jacob begat Joseph. Here it just says that Joseph was of Heli. But how was he of Heli? He was of Heli in another and very real Jewish sense, by his marriage to Mary. In old-time Jewish genealogies, when a link in the chain of descent was carried through a woman, her husband's name was inserted instead of her own. This is important. And so his name was inserted instead of hers. And he thereby became something more than a son-in-law, and he would be called even a son of. So anyway, notice now when I talk about the lineage splitting, you see that diagram right there? Starting at the bottom and going up. You have Jesus, and then of Joseph. And then from Joseph, in Luke, it goes to Heli, to your left. In Matthew, it goes to Jacob. And Heli was undoubtedly the father of Mary. And then it follows up different lineages until it comes to Zerubbabel. And Risa, by the way, was the youngest son of Zerubbabel. And Abiud, which is on the right side, is the oldest son of Zerubbabel. And then, after their lineage comes together in Zerubbabel, it should stay the same all the way up. But it doesn't. It splits again at Salathiel. Because on the right side, the lineage goes through the kings, all the way up to David. It goes through the kings. And as I mentioned, notice the paragraph on the right. It says the lineage splits here after joining in Zerubbabel to show that the legal lineage of David through Solomon is continued through some other means than natural lineage. And that arrow points over there to Zerubbabel, or Salathiel, I mean. So it's to show that the legal lineage of David through Solomon is continued through some other means than natural lineage, because the natural lineage would be through Neri, by all indication. So my conclusions are at the bottom. First, the situation is Jechonias was cursed, but then God removed the curse through some means. Now, number one, and this is what some commentators say, and that is that the curse was only meant for the immediate offspring. But it's a little bit stretching it, in my opinion, because it says, "Write ye this man childless, there shall no son of his seed, no man of his seed that shall prosper in Jerusalem on the throne of David forever." See? And so it appears to be much further than his immediate offspring, although that is a possibility. It could be speaking of his immediate seed. Second thing is that the possibility is that God stopped Jechonias' actual lineage, but continued the inheritance of the royal lineage by a Levirate marriage. The Levirate marriage, a good example of one, was when Boaz married Ruth. And because Ruth had the inheritance of Naomi. But Naomi's husband was dead, Naomi's sons were dead, and all she had was a daughter-in-law, Ruth. And to raise up the inheritance of her and of her father's, Boaz, which was the second in line, the first in line, did not want to marry because he said it would mess up his inheritance. And so Boaz married Ruth, and thereby taking her inheritance and keeping it in the tribe. And so that's one example. Anyway, it mentions there are three possibilities of a Levirate marriage. I'm not going to go into that. The other possibility is adoption. That's letter B. And thirdly, God removed the curse through the virgin birth, and that's for sure. So, even if it hadn't been removed earlier, it was by the virgin birth. Now, look at my opinion there on the bottom. Number one, the curse was alleviated through a Levirate marriage so that the promise still continued in the inheritance. That is, the promise to David through the kings, through Solomon. That promise. Remember I mentioned that scripture to you. The promise was to David and to Solomon that of his seed they shall rule in Jerusalem forever. But then Jeconias was cursed and he was from Solomon. And so God circumvented that curse but kept the promise of the inheritance, whereas the actual seed of Jeconias was cut off. But the seed of David continued to receive the promise through Neri, okay, and then down to Salathiel. Therefore, number two, Jesus was full heir of the kingship. He was full heir of the throne of David through, letter A, the blood, or you might say the seed of David. That's what I really mean, the seed of David in Mary. Letter B, he also had the legal inheritance of David to the throne without the curse in Joseph. He also had the legal inheritance of David. And letter C, the actual blood of his father is king over all. That is, the blood of God, as it were. And it says here, the son in the family takes both the blood and name of his father. And so Christ was of his father God, both in blood and in name. So he had the full inheritance of God. Plus, he also had the full inheritance of David through Mary and through Joseph, both. So he was full heir, both the son of David and the son of God. Okay, one of those interesting sidelights. Let's go on then to the next point in the class, unless there's questions. Yeah?
Let me ask you one question. On the Heli and the Jacob, the arrows above them, when they had children, little lines, does that mean it's a few generations?
Yeah, that's all it means.
So Risa and Abish aren't their grandfathers?
No. No. Yeah, those little lines mean that there are several other generations in there. Just like between Solomon and Jeconias and so forth. Okay. Starting a new section entitled The Actual Birth. Let's look at Luke chapter 2 and verse 1. The actual birth of the Christ. Verse 1. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. I remember this section in Luke 2 real well because my dad would always read it every Christmas Eve before we'd open the presents. Really? Are you Lutheran background? Mennonite? All of the good denominational Christians would do that, I guess. He's called Caesar Augustus. Where did he get that name? Well, he was called Caesar because of his relationship to Julius Caesar. Caesar Augustus was the adopted son of Julius Caesar. The adopted son and his successor. So he was called Caesar because of his relationship to Julius Caesar. And he was called Augustus because of the title he and the Senate picked to show his total supremacy as the emperor with religious sanction. The term Augustus, you see, points out his total supremacy with religious sanction. Augustus comes from the Greek word augur, A-U-G-U-R, and refers to a man who is involved with sorcery. An augur is a man that predicts the future through observance of birds' flight or the entrails of a newly slain animal or other things. And he'll judge what the future is by those things. How, I don't know exactly, but the devil is there to help, of course. And so basically, Augustus is a term that the emperor would use, claiming that he had divine powers. Divine powers. Divine backing. And a divine position. Later, the emperors actually demanded worship. Now, the man's name, Caesar Augustus's actual name, was Caius Octavius. He reigned as emperor from 29 B.C. to 14 A.D. So he had quite a long rule, 29 B.C. 14 A.D. Can you imagine a president of the United States ruling for 43 years here? Imagine that. What that'd be like. He ruled over the world for 43 years. Okay, and the whole world was taxed. Now, this word taxed really points to the enrollment or the registry of the people of the world. It was the Great Census. And after this time, it was regularly used by the Roman Senate. Every 14 years, they'd have a great census of the world. Now, according to Roman law, people were to go to their city where they were born, and that's where they were to be numbered. But according to Jewish law, you would go to the city of your fathers, the house of your fathers, according to your tribe. Now, the Caesars did allow the vassal nations to retain certain of their social customs. And so King Herod, instead of having his nation follow the Roman law, he ordered it according to the Jewish law. And therefore, both Joseph and Mary went to the city of David. They went to the city of David because that's the house of their fathers. And notice what it says in verse 4. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. And of course, his wife would just go with him, although she was also of the house of David. It's interesting to note that she wasn't there very long. Could have been the same night when she arrived that she gave birth to Christ. She wasn't there very long. Can you imagine traveling full term, child born any day, just arriving in Bethlehem and having a child, riding on a donkey over the rough terrain? I mean, they were a hardy folk. And it also lets me know that they weren't planning on having a child born in Bethlehem. It's not like they... Well, we got to work this thing out. I mean, the Christ is born in Bethlehem, so we better hightail it down there. They would have had Jesus born in Nazareth. I mean, they just weren't either aware of that prophecy or it didn't mean that much to them, or they were going to leave things into God's hands. God was going to have to show them what to do. And so the Lord, in order to get them down to Bethlehem, put the whole world into motion. So Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in the city of David, because it's prophesied in Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. And certain of the rabbis were also familiar with this prophecy and used it to point out that no prophet arises out of Galilee. Search and see. For out of Bethlehem he comes. In fact, that was the prophecy they looked to that caused Herod to kill all the children of Bethlehem. There were 200. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from of old, from everlasting. To me, that is to be ruler in Israel. So, Jesus was to be born in Bethlehem. Now, there's another interesting story involved in getting them there right at this time. Because the taxation was first ordered in 23 B.C. At that time, the Jews refused. Rome was afraid to push them, so they let it go. They didn't have the census of them. The tax law, the same law, was reenacted in 8 B.C. But there was resistance from the Jews again. But this time they yielded, but not until 6 B.C. And so this taxation apparently occurred finally in 6 B.C. I want you to notice how Joseph and Mary did submit themselves to God. They weren't trying to do God's plan. So also must we submit ourselves to the will of God. In fact, you know, if we have to try to make God's plan work, I submit to you that it's not God's plan. If we're the ones that got to make it work, it's not God's plan. We are to surrender and to obey and to follow the Lord and to do what He wants us to do. But if we've got to make it work, it's not God's plan. That's our plan. All right, verse 2. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And this first made is pointing to the fact that this was the first time Judea was subjected to this enrollment. It's the first time that Judea was subjected to this enrollment. Actually, Egypt and other places in the world probably had one like it in 20 B.C. 14 years earlier. Now, Cyrenius, in certain registers, his name is also Quirinus, if I pronounce that right, Q-U-I-R-I-N-U-S. He was a Roman consul, and he was in Syria. And there's different historical opinions about him because of a lack of information. He evidently was consul in Syria for two different terms, between 12 B.C. and 6 A.D. And in 6 A.D., it's interesting that this was the second taxing of Judea, 6 A.D. And that's when Judas the Galilean revolted. And he's even mentioned by Gamaliel in Acts 5:37. And when he revolted, he said, no way, we're not under Rome. We're under God. We're not going to submit to this thing. And he was killed, and many of his followers were scattered, and the thing came to nothing. There is controversy over this Cyrenius. Notice we saw his name in Justin Martyr's history and actually apology of the birth of Christ. But there's no list of the consuls in Syria between 4 B.C. and 4 A.D. There's other data that seems to confirm that he was the leader of Syria's economic affairs from 10 to 7 B.C. and then later in 6 A.D. The point being is that the information is not totally accurate. There are lacks and gaps, but the scripture confirms it, and also other writers. It's recently been found that Augustus took a census every 14 years, starting in 8 B.C., and of course he'd had one earlier, and then again at 6 A.D., and this custom continued for 2 centuries. For 2 centuries they did this. Is there a question? Yes. Yes, that's 6 or 5 B.C., somewhere in there. Oh, I see. No, actually what happened is it was a Catholic monk, I believe it was, that set the actual dates in the 5th century. And he missed it by 4 or 5 years. And 0 or 1 A.D. is supposedly the birth of Christ. That's what he did. He set that on what he thought to be the birth of Christ. But fuller information later realized that he missed it. He missed it by 4, 5, 6 years. The different opinions. More recent information seems to put it between 5 and 6 B.C., and I'll be giving that to you in just a minute. All right. So here's Cyrenius, governor of Syria at this time. And that brings me to discussing the date of the birth of Christ. When was he actually born? First thing I want to ask is, which year was he born in? And I'll be giving you a few pinpoints. There's a lot of information on this, different discussions on it, a lot of misinformation. In my research, I'm going to give you the three, to me, the three clearest and the more probable, trustworthy pinpoints. The first one is hinged on the date of Herod the Great's death. And that's probably one of the most certain dates of that time. Herod the Great's death. And he died in March of 4 B.C. Now, this is not the Herod of the Gospels. This is the father of these Herods. This is Herod the Great. He was king over Judea. His date, the date of his death, is confirmed by a lunar eclipse. That's mentioned by Josephus, and also by the dates for the rulership of his sons that began to rule right after his death. Now, he died. Do you know why he died? Soon after he ordered the children of Bethlehem to be slain, he was taken with a loathsome disease in the stomach and the bowels. And he died within a few months after that. And I'll give you more descriptive information on that later. And just before that, he'd asked of the wise men when they saw the star of the King of the Jews. And that's in Matthew 2 and verse 16. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and all the coast thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Okay? So he slew all the children from the age of 2 and under. Let me just kind of diagram this for you. Two and under. Now, in English reckoning, a child that's 2 years old could be up to 35 months and 30 days, you know. But in the Jewish reckoning, a two-year-old child is one who is 23 months and younger. So for the Jews, 2 years old and under would include that area right there. A child to them, as soon as they were born, 1 year old. That was their first year. They're 1 year old. To us, if they're in their first year, they're only months old. And they're not 1 year old. And so when we say he's 1 year old, he could be almost 2 years old. When a Jew said he was 2 years old, that means he was in his second year. And which in some ways is actually more, it just depends on how your mind takes it, actually. But anyway, so here we got it. It would be from 23 months and younger. Now, if Herod inquired the time that the wise men saw the star, and believe me, those wise men were watching every night. I mean, that was their life, watching the stars. They were watching the stars. They were aware of it. Something wasn't going to come out, and then they were going to notice it 6 months later. I mean, it was every night they were aware. Okay? And having seen the star, and Herod hearing when they saw the star, then he chose what age to set it. You can be sure that they hadn't seen the star just a month before. You can be sure they hadn't seen the star 3 years before. You can be sure they hadn't seen the star just right here. Let's say 20 months before. Because he'd have added, I'm sure, a little bit more margin of error. You know what I mean? And so I would assume that they'd probably seen the star somewhere in there. And my assumption is 10 to 15 months. That's what I would say. And we do know that the wise men came to Bethlehem months, probably a year, after Christ was born. And so I say anywhere from 10 to 15 months. And then so Herod put it from 2 years old and under just to make sure, you know. Just to make sure. Now, if he died in 4 BC, and there were a few months after he ordered the death of those children, that was a few months afterwards, and then we add 10 to 15 months to that to get to the birth of Christ, then that would put the birth of Christ approximately in the fall of 6 BC. In the fall of 6 BC. We got the spring of 4 BC. Take it back, say, 3 to 6 months, plus the 10 to 15 months, and you're back a year and a half to the fall of 6 BC. Okay? And that's approximately the date of the birth of Christ, according to this reckoning. All right, a second pinpoint is taken from John the Baptist's ministry, the beginning of his ministry. By the way, do y'all follow that? Y'all follow what I gave you? I just to make it real simple, you've got March. These are each year's. Here's 4 BC, 5 BC, 6 BC. The timeline is going this way. And March would be right here. That's when he died. A few months previous to that is when he ordered the Bethlehem children to be slain. So we'll put it in the fall of 5 BC. And then 10 to 15 months before that was the birth of Christ. Okay? So that puts it in the fall of 6 BC.
All right?
AD? Well, that's on down the line. 4, 3, 2, 1, and then AD starts. No. AD is, let me see, BC is, right. But what is the English? Ara Domini, which means of our Lord, right? Year of our Lord. So that's, right, they goofed. And they put the date of the birth. See, that's when they're going to start. It's the year of our Lord is A.D., basically. Ad Dominem, right? Dominem or something. Yeah, okay. And therefore, it was supposed to be right at the birth of Christ. But they missed it. Okay. So that's why this. I mean, everybody should know that Jesus was born in 1 A.D., but he wasn't. He was born probably 5 or 6 B.C. Yes. No, I read it once, but I can't remember. Can't remember. Do you remember?
They date the start of John the Baptist ministry by the year of the reign of Tiberius, the second Roman emperor. And there's two ways to date his reign. You can date him starting in 14 A.D. when Augustus died, or you can date him in 11 A.D. when he began a co-rulership with Augustus.
Yeah, I'll get to that in just a moment. What I'm asking is, what was the question? How they missed it was because of that co-reign?
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, interesting. And, in fact, I'm going to get to that point in this one right here. That's where we're at now. Number two, the second pinpoint of the possible beginning or the birth of Christ is by the dating of John the Baptist in Luke chapter 3 and verse 1. And that's where we're at now. John the Baptist began his ministry in Luke chapter 3 and verse 1 in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar. Pontius Pilate being governor of Judea, Herod being tetrarch of Galilee, his brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea, the region of Trachonitis, and Lysanias, the tetrarch of Abilene. So there's several cross-sections here. And the most specific one is the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar. Now, according to most historians and the information that I have, these 15 years include a two-year reign when he reigned co-jointly with his father, Augustus. And Augustus died August 19, 14 A.D. Therefore, he began reigning probably at the end of 11 A.D. by all figuration. Okay? He began to reign, that is, Tiberius Caesar began to reign at the end of 11 A.D. This places John's appearance in the year 25 or 26 A.D., depending on which part of the 15th year we're talking about. If we're talking about the beginning of the 15th year or the end of the 15th year of Tiberius's reign, we put it either in 25 or 26 A.D. My tendency is put into 25 A.D. It seems to fit better with other information. Now, add to this the fact that John was a priest. And a priest began their ministry at the age of 30. And we do know that he began his ministry soon before Christ, less than a year, undoubtedly 6 months. Because Jesus began his ministry at about the age of 30, according to Luke 3 and verse 23. It says, "And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age." And it goes through his, it's just after his baptism. And John was 6 months older than Christ. And he undoubtedly started right at the age of 30. The word of the Lord came to him in the wilderness. So that means that John's birth would go back 6 months before Christ from this particular point. So, in the 15th year of Tiberius, going back 29 and a half years, would put us in about 5 B.C. Okay? And depending on how that 15th year again goes, it could be 5 or it could be 6 B.C. So we're still kind of loosely in that area, the same area. All right? Now, a third dating possibility is taken from John 2. Yes? No. No. What's happened is that, see, they were under Roman numbering at that time. And they had a numbering like, I think the time of Christ, it was like 270s or, 260, something like that. I think. Exactly. The dates, right. The Romans, they had their own numbering system at that time that they used. Because of the growing strength of the Catholic Church, actually, of the the church taking a worldwide dominion, they decided to set the dating according to the birth of Christ. But that wasn't until the 5th or 6th century. I think it was 5th century. And so at that time, they changed all the numbers. So now, whenever we look back, we always look at B.C. and A.D. They did not use those same numbers that we're using now. Okay? So all we're doing now is that we're just saying that the year in which Herod died was 4 B.C. That's settled. On our numbering. Now, they didn't call it that back then. Because they didn't have B.C., you know, before Christ. They didn't have that. So, we put the numbering on since that time. But now, we always use that numbering system. Basically, around the world, it's used. And so, we look back at it, and we know that that year is 4 B.C. Well, when was Christ born? Well, he was born probably a year and a half before that. So, that's how we established that. Okay? Okay, we'll continue on that tomorrow. Tomorrow. Twenty-nine or 30. It's usually what that's basically what I've accepted. Yes. Did I send the rule book around? Yeah, I did. Why, my marker? I lost it. Oh, there it is.
When he asked, how did they get the dates wrong? What I was saying was, one method of the calculation was he started 14 AD and go on, and the other method was he started 11 and go on.
Okay. So that's where he made his goof, huh?
Well, that's where they think he might have.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they've got different opinions on that. It was in the 5th century, wasn't it?
I don't remember. I haven't studied
it. In fact, somebody was saying in the back of the Thomas chain. Let me have a Thomas chain so I can look at it real quick. Let me have a Thomas chain.
I don't know why my name's not in here, but I was here that.
You were here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was in class that day.
Okay. I'll just sign it. I'll tell you what. Grab a pen and I'll sign it real quick. Here.